the ANews podcast. This is episode 78 for August 24th, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. For more information and usually good commentary, go to the nonsectarian, anarchistnews.org.
Editorial. A brief review and prison strike. Recently, I finished reading Last Act of the Circus Animals by two long-term political prisoners, Travis Washington and Sean Swain. It is a work of fiction that is a portrayal of prison life as told from the perspective of the jailed, the zoo animals. There are talking tigers, panthers, elephants, and chimpanzees, and the jailers are the ringmaster, their workers, and the society of capitalism that surrounds them. Originally, the text was a three-part photocopied design from 2005-2006, but was recently published 10-plus years later as a 171-page, $5 book by LBC Books. The book tells the tale of the zoo, or the prison, and what that life encompasses for the animals living and working there. The animals go on strike, refuse to work and eat, are beaten and some killed by the ringmaster and their workers. The narrative is a lot of dialogue between the prisoners about their current situation, being locked up, what that means, and how to get free. In some ways, it reminded me a bit of Animal Farm by George Orwell, with a talking animal narrative and some politics, but that's about all. The book by Washington and Swain certainly holds up as a solid work of fiction, representational of how and what it is to be locked up. The book has an intro by three different people, including Anthony Raisin, Jeremy Hammond, and Comrade Miggs. Jeremy Hammond, an anarchist super hacker, writes from behind bars that the last act tells the story of circus animals who unite and rebel against the ringmaster in order to get to the world of the free. On one level, it's a statement against animal cruelty, that in all life on Earth has been subjugated or exterminated for the exclusive benefit of human civilization, and that the vicious practice of zoos and circuses must end. On another level, the story is about capitalist society, the pyramid scheme, cased system in which ruling classes exploit and oppress us all, processing our blood, sweat, and tears into profits and throwing us only enough crumbs to barely survive. But most striking is the scathing criticism against mass incarceration. Human beings are treated like animals, having been kidnapped from the world of the free, warehoused in cages and chains, forced to perform backflips and headstands, and subjected to the control freak reprogramming methods of the ringmaster. Unquote. The last act is a nice read, and anyone who wants updates from one of the authors can tune into the weekly anarchist podcast, The Final Straw Radio, to usually hear from Sean Swain, which is often shared on this podcast as well. Stepping away from the fiction of the book and into the real world, a nationwide prison labor strike has also just begun. Men and women incarcerated in prisons across the nation declaring a nationwide strike in response to the riot in Lee Correctional Institution, a maximum security prison in South Carolina. Seven comrades lost their lives during a senseless uprising that could have been avoided had the prison not been so overcrowded and the greed wrought by mass incarceration and the lack of respect for human life that is embedded in our nation's penal ideology. These men and women are demanding humane living conditions, access to rehabilitation, sentencing reform, and the end of modern-day slavery. And taking from a mainstream media report from The Guardian, it says, quote, "The strike comes 2 years after the last major nationwide prison strike in September 2016 that saw more than 20,000 inmates refuse to show up for work across 12 states. That strike was coordinated out of Holloman Prison in Alabama, a state notorious for its overcrowded and dilapidated penal institutions by a group of inmates styling themselves the Free Alabama Movement," unquote. It also goes on to say, quote, "As inspiration for what promises to be a tough 20 days ahead, strike organizers are leaning on history. The nationwide action began on Tuesday on the 47th anniversary of the death of prominent Black Panther member George Jackson, who was shot as he tried to escape in the prison yard of San Quentin in California. The strike is then scheduled to close on September 9th, the 47th anniversary of the Attica prison rebellion in upstate New York. In an echo of today's protest, the 1971 Attica riot was also framed by inmates as a push for humane conditions and basic political rights. But after 4 days of negotiations, it ended in a bloodbath when New York's then-governor, Nelson Rockefeller, sent in state police armed with shotguns and tear gas. 29 inmates and 10 of their hostages were killed, unquote. Digging a little deeper into the history of the day, the Revolutionary Abolitionist Movement, also known as RAM, writes, "To commemorate the first day of the prison strike, RAM announces the first Nat Turner Day this August 21st, 2018. It is no coincidence that this is the first day of this year's nationwide prison strike, and we couldn't be more honored to participate in this historic moment. On this day in 1831, the Nat Turner Rebellion began. Nat Turner and his band of 70 comrades traveled from plantation to plantation to slay their oppressors and free those they encountered along the way. This act of rebellion is an important precursor for our struggle today. The initiative of these brave people to risk their own well-being to free those held in captivity around them speaks both to the militancy necessary for community defense and the selflessness of revolutionary struggle," unquote. And the date also has some anarchist history to it as well, as 91 years ago, Sacco and Vanzetti were executed by the state for being anarchists. It resulted in massive protests that erupted around the world. I leave you with a quote from Alfredo and Bonanno, writing from Rebibbia Prison in 1997. "Prison is the most direct, brutal expression of power. And like power, it must be destroyed. It cannot be abolished progressively. Anyone who thinks they can improve it now in order to destroy it in the future will forever be captive of it. The revolutionary project of anarchists is to struggle along with the exploited and push them to rebel against all abuse and repression, so also against prison. What moves them is the desire for a better world, a better life with dignity and ethic, where economy and politics have been destroyed. There can be no place for prison in that world. That is why anarchists scare power. That is why they are locked up in prison."
What's new this week? Words from anarchist comrade Juan in hiding. Underground person Juan weighs in on a discourse we have limited access to support someone who says this, quote, "Scores of policemen from several different towns climb the stage of the courthouse, supposedly in order to reconstruct the history of the contemporary anarchist movement. The very beginning is identified, as we saw many other times already, at the time of the Marini trial during the 90s. Starting from those years, the professional peeping Toms begin to enumerate and distort every small, insignificant, and personal detail stolen with an unstoppable and obsessive dig work from our lives and our relations. A sad, mechanical, and deterministic picture about which we couldn't care less. Within individual differences and bitter arguments, sometimes heavily loaded with opposing tensions, lies the history of the anarchist movement, which is the history of every single one of us with all its contradictions. To that history belong revolutionary methods, some of which now sit among the accused in Turn Courthouse. In times like this, more than ever, to support revolutionary methods means fighting against state repression, aimed to bury our comrades beneath years of jail and to destroy the history of the anarchist movement," unquote.
On education, an interview with David Gilbert and Jaleel Muntikim from freedomnews.org.uk. My initial skimming of this piece has me pissed off at the interviewer. When interviewing someone, it's straight up rude to leave in a bunch of brackets, sick closed brackets. You either correct that shit or just let it go. Then when you don't even catch all the grammatical errors, it's just embarrassing. But never mind, moving on. Except that there's not a lot to move on to. These two political prisoners are not anarchist, are not asked, and do not respond with anything about the state, although obviously they don't like the current one, and the differences between their answers is not explored. Obviously, it can be difficult to ask questions of prisoners, but there is no explanation or context set, so it just seems like more sloppy work from the interviewer. Wasted opportunity. On the other hand, it does provide evidence for folks continuing their resistance from inside, which is always valuable on some level.
Till All Are Free, International Week of Solidarity with Anarchist Prisoners, from 325, by the Idea Collective and M. Polothia. Speaking of continuing resistance from the inside, August 21st started the formal recognition of some actions that have been happening and the beginning of more actions, both inside, hunger strikes, work strikes, etc., and out. Quote, a few years back, persecutions against imprisoned anarchists for texts they authored was unimaginable, but now the judicial and prosecutorial authorities would respond to that with the use of solitary confinement, disciplinary hearings, and conditions that bury prisoners deeper in the cold cells. Some years ago, we couldn't imagine that friendship and family ties to anarchists could lead to long sentences, social and financial disaster, and smear campaigns through the media and the internet, where all sorts of lackeys shamelessly target our comrades without having to face any consequences. Power attempts to silence our brothers and sisters and at the same time create a desert of reactions throughout the entire antagonistic movement. Freedom to our captive brothers and sisters, practical solidarity to our anarchist hostages. Unquote.
Trans Santiago Busburn from Act for Freedom Now. The bus was on the 325 line. Ha! Quote, we are launching a call for agitation against every kind of cage in all the corners of the planet. The practices of torture, murder, and imprisonment persist in every region thanks to the state. And that is why we are claiming those taken and killed by capital and the state. We are not forgetting the present situation in the territory dominated by the Chilean state, where anyone who opposes resistance ends up murdered slash imprisoned. Nor can we forget the situations that happen in other states all over the world. Therefore, we vindicate all those fallen into the hands of death or cages while resisting power, as in the case of Santiago Maldonado in the adjacent region. Unquote.
Anarchism in the Northeast and Beyond, from neanarchistgroup.org out of the UK. This is an introduction to a new group in the UK, and it sounds good to me. It ends with 6 points about what anarchism means to them. Point one is, quote, it means figuring out how to work together to meet our individual needs, working with each other rather than for or against each other, and when this is impossible, it means preferring strife to submission and domination. It means not valuing any system or ideology above the people it purports to serve, not valuing anything theoretical above the real things in this world. It means being faithful to real human beings and animals and ecosystems, fighting for ourselves and beside each other, not out of responsibility, not for causes or other intangible concepts. It means denying that there is any universal standard of truth, aesthetics, or morality, and contesting, wherever it appears, the doctrine that life is essentially one-dimensional, unquote. I look forward to hearing more, when appropriate.
We don't forget, from Crime Think. This is some history of DB's alleged involvement with actions and of the Green Scare, which continues to have repercussions on actions to this day, and is valuable history for those who didn't live through it, and maybe for some who did. It also marks the further blending of Crime Think and IGD, a trajectory we can only watch with puzzlement. Quote, the resurgence of street-level fascism in the U.S. on the coattails of the Trump campaign is merely the tip of the iceberg. Worldwide, we have seen a wave of reactionary populism that will continue to circumscribe the popular imagination for a number of years. As sea levels rise and natural disasters continue to displace poor and working-class people in Latin America, the Middle East, Indochina, and Oceania, warlords, right-wing gangs, xenophobic governments, and broad sections of the wealthy and ruling classes will collaborate to produce fanatical and nationalist and life-denying discourses. Refugees from across the world are already being denied safe passage into the gated communities of the global north. Unquote.
The Discourse is Not the Territory, from C4SS by William Gillis. This piece is an excellent example for me of how a message can come across so differently just because of who is saying it. We here at AIM News suffer this all the time, and now I'm doing it with WG. Quote, one of the main things the social media age has done is collapse divides between private and public conversations. This leaves everyone constantly on edge for how they posture and maneuver rhetorically contra the group, to the point of overwhelming honest internal discussions. Unquote. This is something I agree with, but because WG is the one saying it, I immediately see that statement as a lead-up to an argument for false consciousness, as in, when WG has friends who say they agree with something WG doesn't like, even in personal conversations, they must just be confused. Really, that's neither here nor there. I just thought it was interesting to watch myself do that in real time. Anyway, aside from a disagreement with his underlying assumptions of winning, objective reality, and, of course, solutions, I don't have any problems with this text. He talks about the impact of the internet on group maintenance, and how anarchists are different from more authoritarian groups, and that we should not let our talking get in the way of what's going on. Quote, "Our narratives and movement norms have warped to respond to a discourse constantly under siege. We must work hard to avoid being blinded. We must remember that discourse is not merely chess moves against one another, but also a net that can be draped over and pressed up against objective reality so as to better empower ourselves." Unquote. I don't disagree with any of that. Perhaps I'm missing something.
Get involved. London Anarchist Festival. From freedomnews.org.uk. The fallout from last year's trans versus turf versus everybody hoopla is this effort at decentralization. An excellent tactic, even if I disagree with the slogan they're adopting, not the anarchist book fair. Quote, "We want to take a broad approach to anarchism. As long as it's anti-authoritarian and anti-capitalist, it's in. We will not accept any events that are racist, sexist, ableist, transphobic, etc., and the policies of each venue must be followed as usual. We want to have an emphasis on getting new people involved in anarchist politics, so introductory slash easily accessible events are especially wanted." Unquote.
Meet the anarchist who wants to abolish government by joining it. From theoutline.com by Gavin Jenkins. Theoutline.com is bright and splashy, vice-like, and I assume that's what they're going for. This piece about John Michael Carrico, a.k.a. JM, an anarchist who is running for the U.S. Senate, is somewhat interesting and somewhat offensive. Anarchists being willing to step outside of boxes is not something that is automatically horrible. And the rationale that running for office is an effective way to get more people to hear what you're saying is not automatically stupid. If JM is not trying to win, but merely have a better loudspeaker, that seems like an experiment worth watching. Of course, they have to say that they're trying to win or the loudspeaker goes away. And pretending to try to win automatically weakens the point. For example, JM says they want to push the Democrats further to the left. This is not an anarchist goal, but it is a reasonable thing to say for someone who is willing to win. So there are contradictions. This person is far enough away from me that I find myself amused rather than irritated, which I cannot say about the interviewer, Gavin Jenkins, or their editor, perhaps, who, while respectful for the first part, ends the piece with some spectator bullshit. Quote, "After hours of continuous rain, the sky had finally cleared. Spleen was wearing red eyeshadow, and for a moment, Carrico thought they were bleeding. Carrico wiped the dripping makeup with their thumb, and then set the shield and broomstick on top of a garbage can. As they walked toward down the street, holding hands, Carrico wondering how their dog was doing, home alone with neighbors feeding him. I hope Phil's okay, Carrico said." Unquote.
Lowell, Massachusetts, Anarchist Book Fair, from Anonymous. Yep, it's book fair season again. Quote, "Join Mill City Zine Distro for a day of workshops and a chance to check out some radical literature from vendors around the New England area and beyond." Unquote. The poster has a super cute take on the Circle A, which makes up for them confusing Viscera and Little Black Card. They're totally different. Lol.
Calling it terror on recent attacks in Southern Ontario, from North Shore Counter Info. I don't agree with the anarchist thinking of this author, but I appreciate that they did some careful work with this piece, and that they're clear about their own biases, even if that sometimes looks like they think they're speaking for all anarchists. But there are some valuable points included here. Quote, "The powerful tend to mean two things when they choose to call something terrorism. One is that they consider those carrying out the actions to be beyond the realm of political consideration. Their ideas matter only in as much as it proves the act was terrorism, but those ideas are rendered unthinkable by association. The other is that the terrorism label is tied to a set of legal structures that have been developed over the past two decades to severely punish political violence carried out by anyone other than a state, which is ironic because the word terrorism was coined to refer to the actions of states, notably the terror in revolutionary France, but it has since evolved to mean literally any other kind of violence," unquote. This text has a lot of thoughtful and relevant comments, so read up.
Decentralizing the Green Revolution, from C4SS by Logan Marie Glitterbaum. This is a very practical paper on what we, okay, quote-unquote we, can do to make things better that doesn't invisibilize the actual main actors in environmental devastation. Quote, "While no one is saying to never recycle, it should be recognized that government recycling programs were actually a scheme concocted by big corporations to pass the blame off from them to the individual. Instead of placing the responsibility for waste and environmental degradation, At the feet of the corporations who use unsustainable packaging for their products, we blame the consumer for littering or not recycling. It should also be known that some recycling programs are basically shams, with much of what is thrown in recycling still winding up in the dump due to it being too difficult to process. The only main difference is the gas spent to drive an extra truck around to pick it up separately. And even for the things that are recycled, that still doesn't take into account the energy used at the facilities and the air pollution caused by melting down certain materials. Unquote. However, the paper promotes better practices that individuals can take, which pretty much negates the reality that individuals have very limited impact, i.e., the paper starts out strong and kind of turns into just another individual-focused list of suggestions. But with the added bonus of the option to just leave the Earth at some point. This is C4SS, after all.
Those accused in Operation ICE acquitted from Act for Freedom Now. Folks arrested in 2015 have been acquitted. Quote, the prosecution, who had initially pressed terrorism charges following attacks on banks in Madrid and Barcelona, had recently changed them and demanded sentences of 2 years only for the charge of apologia of terrorism. This happened because most evidence was linked to Facebook and Twitter posts. Among these, mention was made of a post saying, Goku lives, the struggle continues, we'll burn your ATMs, death to capital, hashtag make someone happy and attack banks because stones are available, running is free, and the police will be in the center chasing drunk people, sometimes accompanied by pictures of banks under attack. The judgment rules that these posts do not incite terrorism, unquote, at least not this week.
Indonesia, update on the anarchist prisoners from Yogyakarta, our weekly update. Quote, six detainees will soon have finished their trial process. They're waiting to find out the results of the trial and how long their sentences will be. However, there are four prisoners who still remain in Kobangan prison, including Usil, and one other prisoner who is still being held in Sleman police station. It is still unclear what is happening with their trial process. Unquote. Thanks, Anarchist BC.
Audio. The Final Straw Radio, William C. Anderson. An hour and a minute. There is nothing by Sean Swain this episode. Sad face. Almost the entire hour is William C. Anderson talking about the theory of a newly released book by him and his co-author Zoe Zamudzi. The theory is interesting, which is that the state, the U.S. presumably, doesn't and has never recognized black people as citizens, meaning that black people live outside the state and so are prone to anarchist tendencies. At least that's what I got from listening to him. And that is plenty provocative. I look forward to reading more about it. Unfortunately, the talk became one about the need to organize and to emulate the Black Panther social services programs to more or less build a new society in the shell of the old. There is no doubt that people need stuff, but the issue of providing services, especially because, as William C. Anderson said, quote, people will listen to you if you feed them, unquote, is a complicated and contradictory one and reminds me of the Christians who try to save the souls of the captive poor. It is true that everyone falls apart when they try to talk about solutions, so no hard feelings. By the way, Anarchism and the Black Revolution by Lorenzo Comboa Irvin is not hard to find. It is plenty accessible on the anarchistlibrary.org.
The Hotwire number 33, August 22nd, 2018, 45 minutes. This is worth listening to if you want to know more about the organizing around the prison strikes, which starts around 11 or 12 minutes in and goes to roughly 18 minutes in. Following that is a touching talk with someone on the bringing down of Silent Sam, a Confederate statue, and that is followed by some overblown rhetoric about the significance of the statue's removal. But yeah, taking wins where you can get them, that's what it's all about, right? Sean Swain is still in isolation. This is a script in the show notes to call director Gary Moore and demand better treatment. Quote, I'm calling on behalf of Sean Swain, inmate number 243-205. I am a friend of Sean. I am calling to request the ODRC grant Mr. Swain's appeal regarding his most recent disciplinary record, drop the charges, and lower his security level from 5B to 2. Mr. Swain is not a physical security risk, and there is no reason to keep him at such a high security rating where he will be unable to get the programming he needs to be eligible for rehabilitation and parole. Thank you for your consideration. Unquote. The phone number for this call is in the notes of the Hotwire podcast.
Anarchy Radio, August 21st, 2018. An hour, two calls.
Black and Green Podcast, Episode 11, an hour and 30 minutes. Quote, anniversaries of Charlottesville and execution of Mike Brown and the unending tension of social media and civilization. Poem break, Joan Kovach's timing. Of Gods and Country, update, overview, and reading. Murders of Native women and the legacies and institutions of colonization. Intergenerational trauma and domestication. Why Hunter-Gatherers Matter, unquote.
Topic of the week, an anarchist survey. Over the years, there have been more than a handful of attempts at an anarchist survey. Way back in 1926, some anarchists from Steubenville, Ohio, called Los Iconoclastas, conducted an international survey of anarchists. In 1928, Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman created a similar survey that was an influence on the Encyclopédie Anarchiste of the time. Since then, surveys in the digital world have become a bit more common, with some from recent memory being conducted by Anarchismo, Libcom, a survey from some South African anarchists over Reddit, and even some Google forms here and there. Listed below are 13 questions taken from the new anarchist survey that was recently created and mentioned in passing as an article on ANews. We've taken all 13 questions from the new website and project, Encounters with Anarchism, Exploring Our Beautiful Ideal, which also has an entry from here, a separate link, but is unrelated to the project of ANews. We're simply sharing questions because it's an intriguing idea. There is a bit here, and we tend to have less questions generally in the topic of the week, while also moderating the really lengthy walls of text that just makes it difficult to participate and read a thread. So if you find yourself going down that path, perhaps share a link to your blog or a forum someplace instead, or not. Are we going to read the 13 questions?
Sure. We're going to try to answer question 2 and question 3.
1. How would you succinctly define anarchism? Is there a shared anarchist project? And if so, how would you characterize it? 2. What is the relationship between anarchism and the concept of anarchy? 3. What is the value of tradition within the anarchist milieus, and what might be its uses? 4. What specifically is the role to be played in the present by the anarchist literature, whether theoretical or artistic, of the past? 5. What are the most significant challenges facing anarchists and anarchism, as you understand it, in the present? 6. How would you characterize the present state of anarchist activity outside the realm of theory and propaganda? 7. How would you characterize the present state of anarchist theory and propaganda? 8. What are the most urgent changes to be made in anarchist practice moving forward? 9. What is the role of some kind of anarchist unity moving forward? What form could or should that unity take? 10. What are the greatest needs with regard to new anarchist theory, propaganda, literature, and art? 11. Do you currently identify with any particular anarchist current or tendency? And if so, how do you characterize your position? 12. What additional questions would it be useful to pose to a broad anarchist audience? And 13. Would you be interested in participating in future surveys, perhaps addressing more specific elements of anarchist theory, practice, and culture?
So, one of the reasons that I've never been inclined towards one of these surveys or towards this sort of thing is that I guess I'm, to put it rudely, I'm not particularly inclined towards half-ass answers. And these questions just feel like they're like asking for people's opinions. And at this point, I don't want to hear most people's opinions.
You don't think that these could be called conversation starters?
No, sure. I mean, this set of questions is fine as like a room of friends to start a conversation if you don't know how to talk to each other. In other words, like if I read 10 responses to this, you know, probably half of the responses I'll nod my head to, and half the responses I'll sort of shake my head to, and I won't feel necessarily enriched by the sort of Q&A form.
I don't think that that's what it's supposed to do. I'm actually going to go in a direction different than I normally do, where I'm going to say that if I went to do anarchy on the internet, and this is where it started, and that place, website, forum, whatever, were full of other people engaging with these questions in good faith, I think that that would be a place where I might discover things that I didn't know. Because there's all kinds of things on the internet that I don't know anything about. Or people from different places who are different than me talking about things in a way that I would never talk about them, whether I agree with them or disagree with them. Because I'm surrounded by a particular group of people.
And this advertisement was brought to you by anarchy101.org. That does exactly this.
No, actually, that's true. No, you're right. Anarchy101.org does actually do this. So I guess for me, if I frame it in a particular way, I think this is incredibly useful. I think that you are right in that it doesn't do that other thing, but I don't think it needs to.
No, and that's fair. There's definitely an audience for this sort of thing. I mean, people love questionnaires.
Do they? They don't. You're making that up.
I mean, there was that whole vignette in Adam Curtis where this was Century of the Self, episode 3, uh-huh. where there was a discussion that the Xerox Corporation put out these huge surveys in the 70s, uh-huh. and people, it was like 100-plus questions, and people got to, you know, fill them out, and afterwards there was sort of this little vignette that said, someone was like, can you send me more of these?
No.
Yeah.
I'm definitely not one of those people. Sometimes customer service always asks you if you will take the survey, always like, no, because I just don't want to take the survey.
So, just for the topic of the week here, we're going to answer two of the questions in good faith, which is always useful for me to be reminded of. Mm-hmm. Two, what is the relationship between anarchism and the concept of anarchy?
I'm going to start with some definitions here.
Well,
or do you want to be a little more abstract than that?
Well, that's what the question is. I mean, as a matter of fact, this is why I hate questions like this.
I knew this was where you were going to go.
Because I think that these terms are interchangeable. But, of course, I was criticized once in a pamphlet for using the word anarchism, where, of course, I meant anarchy. Basically, what happened was, and I'll blame insurrectionary anarchism for this, that there's a certain sort of tweedy anarchist that wants to be exceedingly precise in their utilization of language, which the reason why I don't like that is because it basically means that if you haven't followed the path of anarchist discourse over years and or decades, you have no idea why anyone cares about this distinction.
Right.
But, okay, I guess, fair enough, I have been following this discourse for decades, so I understand what happened, which was that, you know, anarchism at some point became a convenient term to criticize as the stodgy ideological anarchism, which of what I would call the first wave, as opposed to the liberated, dynamic, non-ideological anarchy of anarchy that, you know, has risen in the context of post-left anarchism and insurrectionary anarchism. And so there are a number of people who think that this linguistic distinction sort of says all that, you know, just in a word. But in point of fact, you know, one of the sort of stodgy old style anarchist critiques is that anarchy has become anarchism, basically not immune to the same critique that anarchists make of anarchism. And I actually agree with that criticism. I don't think that a word is enough to point to the distinction. But I think the concept here is that anarchism is a noun and anarchy is a verb. And that's the relationship between them.
Well, and the question that actually opens it up, because it's the concept of anarchy.
Yeah. Well, the concept of verbing all the time instead of fucking noun. No. I think some motherfuckers want a verb and some motherfuckers just want a noun.
Everybody wants to verb all the time. I was one of the last people digging in my heels claiming that Facebook was not a verb. And I was already too late. When this distinction became clear to me in the moment, which would have been
I don't know, probably the early 2000s. Mostly, it just felt like a way for the incoming kids to remind the previous generation that they were old. Mm-hmm. You know, just kind of a way to make a line. I am the young, and you are the old, and, you know, everything that comes with the implication of you being old.
Therefore, I am anarchy, and you are anarchism.
Basically, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was what it felt like in the moment. I think if you tie it to France at 68, it's a little bit more interesting.
Except no one in France was doing that.
Right, except no one was. But you've actually done the best articulation that I've ever heard of that. Mm. But I think that it is a difference without a distinction. And I think that people either get caught up in it and they get stuck, which seems unnecessary. But I kind of don't have a problem with people using the distinction as their motivation for whatever the thing it is that they're going to do, because you have to find your motivation wherever you're going to find it. But I tend to not fundamentally believe that it matters. And at the time, the youth that were claiming the anarchy, them talking about why the anarchy and not the anarchism was never particularly well thought out or very interesting. It was just a lot more of, you know, those old folkies. Those who came before, who know nothing.
Well, you know, the other way in which this is getting sort of bandied about nowadays would be all the ways in which the Invisible Committee have dominated other people's sort of linguistic terrains. So the idea of sort of like, you know, be communist and live anarchy, I think that they have successfully sort of, you know, put their dog in the fight around this sort of language. In other words, they're not, and they never have sort of said anything about do anarchism.
It's true.
It's always anarchy.
It always is, yeah.
Verb. Do.
Because we're going to verb.
I mean, anarchism, you know, the thing that it does invite is like a definition, which fuck that shit.
That's true. Okay.
Next question. What's the value of tradition within the anarchist milieus, and what might be its uses? And this is actually another reason why I hate this survey and anything like it. No, I mean, again, this really does have to do with the personal proclivities a person has around the things that they like.
Right.
Some people that we know and that we care for a great deal, they like history.
Right.
And they like sociology, and they like other gross things like, you know, kidney beans or something. And
don't hate on kidney beans.
But the point being that I like philosophy. I like ideas. And so, you know, part of the reason why some anarchist publishers do not necessarily appeal to me is because they seem entirely devoted to history and to the suppression of things that are alive and happening now in defense of waiting until they die so they can write a history book about them. And so, to repeat the question, what's the value of tradition within the anarchist milieus, and what might be its uses? Well, fundamentally, understanding anarchist traditions, I think, is incredibly important for even a contemporary anarchist, for even an anarchist that's, whatever, rah-rah, and they're going to be gone in 2 years. Understanding that there is a history and a set of traditions, and understanding why those traditions sort of are what they are and why they've changed, or to the extent to which they've changed. I think all of that is important, and it's part of like a person's story. But that's assuming, or I guess that's because I like the idea that a person who becomes an anarchist as part of their life project. In other words, it's not useful in and of itself. It's useful to the extent to which, even if I strongly disagree with another anarchist, I sort of want to be in their life, and I want to understand their motivations and understand, you know, the victories we fought and lost and the victories we fought and won, to whatever extent that's true. To me, that's the value of tradition. But in general, this conversation is actually an argument for having a historical gaze, and that I'm less on board with. Like, the working class, in my lifetime, there is not a chance that the working class is going to return and take its noble role as the mover of engines and all the rest. And so understanding that the bulk of the anarchist story involves that basic assumption, that's not helpful to thinking about what anarchist activity should look like today. And so in that sense, it's like, fuck tradition. And so, you know, so for me, that tension is I guess, important. And of course, like that's why I think that there is a usefulness to tradition, which is that tradition sort of allows anarchism to be a multi-generational thing that isn't just one political program, full stop.
Huh. My experience with tradition is tradition being invoked to proclaim what is anarchy and what is not.
Right. What's right and what's wrong.
What's right and what's wrong. We can draw our lineage back to this thing. This is true. This is correct. Anything that isn't a part of this lineage isn't. Which is, you know, from my perspective, insane and frustrating because I think that there are all kinds of ways that tradition can be inspiring and, respectful, and that there are ways that history is important. And I mean, we talked before about you know, anarchist, I don't remember if it were traditions or rituals, but you know, things like May Day and you know,
picnics
and we don't do that. There's this way that we're missing that whole piece of culture, which I think actually makes us weaker and
impoverished, yeah,
and more one-dimensional and flatter and less interesting, and that's never where people almost never where people go with tradition. They go, they use it in defense of their
orthodoxy.
Yeah, of their basically, you know, it starts to look something like something very Christian and religious, and it's not just frustrating; it's disappointing because I want us to be better than that.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
No one familiar with the history of anarchism can deny that critique is useful. However, it is necessary to investigate before we incinerate, and the line between investigating and persecuting is a very fine one. On the subject of making accessible the content of certain authors, a handful of individuals have stepped over this line repeatedly. Their primary achievement has been in confusing the public mind as between the internal and the external threats of the individualists tending toward the wild and their publications. We must not confuse dissent with disloyalty. We must remember always that accusation is not proof, and that conviction depends upon evidence and not accessibility alone. We will not walk in fear one of another. We will not be driven by fear into an age of unreason. If we dig deep in our history and our principles and remember that we are not descended from the fearful, not from those who feared to write, to speak, to associate, and to defend causes that were, for the moment, unpopular. This is no time for those who oppose these book burners' methods to keep silent, or for those who approve. We can deny our culture and our history, but we cannot escape responsibility for the result. There is no way for an anarchist to abdicate their responsibilities. As anarchists, we have come into our full inheritance at a tender age. We proclaim ourselves, as indeed we are, the defenders of freedom, wherever it continues to exist. But we cannot defend freedom outside of our small circles if we desert it from within. The actions of these book burners have caused alarm and dismay among all of us, and given considerable comfort to our enemies. And whose fault is that? Not really the book burners, They didn't create this situation of fear. They merely exploited it for social capital gain. And rather successfully. Cassius was right. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. Good fight and good luck.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel. What's New was written by Jackie and read by Chisel and Dim. The editorial is by Rosinante. The POV is by Murrow. We thank Aragorn and Ariel for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com. For news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, there's anarchistnews.org.